1974. It was a time of great change in Australia. Gough Whitlam was Prime Minister, Number 96 was on the TV, and colour television was about to change our lives. That year also gave birth to something called the AMCO Cup, rugby league's very own knockout comp, like England's fabled FA Cup, sort of. It made a motley crew of footballers from the New South Wales bush famous when the Western Division had an unlikely victory, beating Penrith in the grand final of the AMCO Cup. But after all of that, the characters disappeared basically as quickly as they arrived. Today, as football finals fever rises in both the AFL and the NRL, the surviving Bushies, 17 of them, are on their way back to Sydney to get the honours that they didn't receive 40 years ago. Ian Heads is one of Australia's foremost sports writers, and he's written the story of that famous victory of 40 years ago. Ian Heads, welcome back to RM Breakfast.
Thanks a lot, Fran. Nice to be here.
First off, tell us about the AMCO Cup. I didn't remember it all. Obviously, the main rugby league club, St George, Souths, they'll be involved. How did the boys from the bush, the Western Division, even get a game in the AMCO Cup? What was it?
Well, almost by chance is the answer to that. You mentioned the FA Cup. The idea of the AMCO Cup was certainly based on that, cooked up by a Sydney entrepreneur named Colin McLennan, who was having a glass of red wine one night and saw a television program which indicated that the greatest effect on anything with the arrival of colour TV would be on sport. So he thought, not a bad idea to do something in rugby league, and it came from that.
But it wasn't colour TV day. So this was a made-for-TV comp, but it was pre-colour telly.
Yeah, he was looking ahead. That was the last year of black-and-white television, 1974, with the arrival of colour in June, March the following year. He saw the potential, I guess, and the league, to their credit, backed him, took a punt on it. And then flying by the seat of their pants, I've got to say, managed to concoct a competition. And Western Division, the team that finally won it, were sort of added late. They were an add-on towards the end. A couple of teams dropped out.
So they were there to make up the numbers?
Pretty much.
Because
pretty
some much. Of the NRL teams didn't want a part of it?
No, the NRL, they were just, the premiership teams then. They were okay. They're a bit half-hearted, but Queensland and Newcastle, two strong areas, dropped out. They didn't want to play, so the Bushies got the call.
So enter Western Divisions,
exactly.
The Bushies. Very early on, it was apparent that the Western Division had a star in the form of a bald-headed forward called Ted Ellery, who quickly earned the nickname TV Ted Ellery. Tell us about him.
Well, he was a most unlikely hero of the event, Fran. He was a sort of a journeyman rugby league player. He came from Lithgow. He was a miner. But the first time he came on in a match was their first game against Auckland, which was played in deep mud. And he came as a reserve off the bench in his beautiful, fresh, pristine gear. And the first time he touched the ball, he broke through and ran 40 metres and scored a try. And with the light sort of dazzling off his bald head, he had a shiny bald head. So he went on to play very well in all the games, captured the imagination of the public, really.
So we keep calling them a team of bushies, but were they really that, or were they sort of league players who happened to reside in the bush, or were they really, just a few roughies who together made a great team?
Yeah, the latter, really. They were a bunch of bush blokes from a very wide area, from Lithgow, people who know New South Wales, well, Lithgow all the way out to Cobar. It's about 500 kilometres, and then Barradine across to Cowra, quite a breadth of territory too, so they covered a huge...
It's a great story. It's a great story. The night they won the final, beating Penrith 6-2, do people feel like this was a real game? Were Penrith really giving it their all? Or did they make it to the top because the league teams weren't really in it?
The Sydney teams got serious later on. There was a little bit of fiddling around. The premiership was still their main thing, the weekend event, but they started to get serious about it. There was $15,000 prize money. They were hungry for that. And Penrith were a fairly new club in 1967, still pretty much a bush town then too, west of Sydney. But they had beaten the week before, they beat what became a very great rugby league team, Eastern Suburbs, coached by the great Jack Gibson, one of the, premier coaches. So they were very genuine contenders. But by then, the Bush had a sort of momentum. The Western Division boys had a momentum going under an extremely tough coach, a fellow named Johnny King, who played with the great St George team and was a hard-nosed fellow who just had the right formula for them.
Did the TV audience get behind them?
Yeah, a huge following in the last couple of weeks, particularly something like a million viewers for the final game, and 20,000 people at Leichhardt Oval, the Sydney Suburban Ground. They broke down the fences to get in. Such was the And it was mainly about Western Division because it was a fairy tale story, you know, against the odds. They would have been 500 to 1 outsiders at the start of it.
A fairy tale story with a fairy tale ending. Did they get a big trophy? Did they get medals? How fated were they?
Well, not too much, really. They were invited back to a function. They certainly were awarded the cup, which was a nice trophy. But the players themselves played for barely, wasn't really about money. They were paid a small amount of money. But at a function at the Opera House, they were given tiny little translucent paperweights. That's all they got, one of those each. But
And then what happened to them? Did they disappear back to the bush, or did any of them get signed up for the league clubs? I mean, I know they did play a game against Great Britain, which really is quite legendary.
It is, yeah. That was sort of the dark heart of that season, Fran. It was played in the midst of the AMCO Cup matches. Great Britain's team touring Australia, getting ready for test matches against Australia, was played at Orange at Wade Park.
So I thought they'd have a friendly against the Western Division.
Yeah, it was never going to be a friendly. There was a tradition of hard games, and that was a brutal game, described by one of the senior journalists there as the dirtiest match he ever saw, with several players sent off, three players sent off, and the crowd setting out almost to lynch the referee afterwards. So it was a pretty lively afternoon's football. But it added Western Division ran Great Britain close in that match, and it added belief, I think, to them that, hang on, we can probably do something in this AMCO Cup.
But after all of this, essentially, they got a paperweight and they went back to the bush. They went back to the pubs that they were working in or owning, be farmers, butchers, miners, whatever it was.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, they were timber cutters. And
did any of them ever make it to the league after that performance?
Yeah, a couple of them did, yeah. Particularly one fella, a big fella named Terry Fay, who still lives at Dubbo. Became a great winger for Australia, actually. A big, strong bloke who was then, I think, training greyhounds. He's done a few things, Terry. But so he was sort of the ducks of the class, really. But some others came down and... TV Ted, no. He was happy with his life in Lithgow. A few of the others put a toe in the water down here, but they were genuine country blokes and they were drawn back, I think, you know, to go back and play in their hometowns.
So what's going to happen today for them?
Well, to their credit, the rugby league, whose interest in history is sometimes a little lower than it should be, in my view, but today, to their credit, they've invited the team to come back. There's going to be presentations to them. They're going to be feted at a function in the Rugby League Museum at Moore Park. So it's a very special day for these guys who are, you know, they're 40 years on, so they're men in their 60s and 70s now, but it means the world to them.
As we speak, I think they're on convoy on the way down from the bush to get this recognition.
They're on their way, yep.
Ian, thank you very much for joining us. It's a great story.
It's a pleasure. Thanks a lot, Fran.
Sports writer Ian Heads, and his book, The Night the Music Died, How a Bunch of Bushies Forged Rugby League's Last Great Fairy Tale. You can never have too much footy history. It's published by Pan Macmillan.